This is Living Lab. I'm Heather Goldstone. Octopus are famous for their intelligence. We've all seen the viral videos of an octopus escaping from what seems like a tightly sealed tank or short-circuiting some researcher's carefully planned test. It's always amazing, especially when you consider that some of the octopus's closest relatives are clams and snails, not exactly mental powerhouses. A new study may hold clues to how the octopus evolved such intelligence. Josh Rosenthal is a senior scientist at the Marine Biological Laboratory in Woods Hole, and he's a co-author on that study. Josh, welcome to Living Lab.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
All right. Let's start with the really important stuff. I can never get enough answers to this question. What is the actual plural of octopus?
Oh, throwing the etymology at me straight off. Okay. This is a good one. I had to learn this from a last paper that we wrote, and when we worked with more than one species of octopus. And the trick is, it's not a Latin word. It's a Greek word. So officially, it should be octopodes.
Okay.
However, in common usage, it's accepted in English to be octopuses.
Okay.
Octopi
but
is incorrect.
Not octopi. That is straight out. Okay. Mm-hmm. Good to know. All right. So this study really has gotten a ton of media coverage in the past week and a half or so. What do you think drives so much interest in octopuses?
Well, I think people have a basic grasp there that something, it's strange to have so much intelligence concentrated so far away from us.
I mean, it's the only invertebrate that even comes close.
Right. It's the only animal lineage that comes close. So you have the vertebrate lineage, which we all commonly accept as intelligent creatures from birds and mammals, monkeys, et cetera, us. But then the only other one is the cephalopods, which branched off, you know, probably over 500 million years ago.
Well, and as I already said, I mean, that branch includes, yes, the octopus, the squid, cuttlefish, but then, I mean, clams, snails, right? So it's not that whole lineage that's really intelligent. It's really just the octopus and some of these cephalopods. So
it's not even all of the cephalopods. I mean, I think most people aren't too intrigued when they look at how a nautilus behaves. And
okay,
nautilus
fair
are
enough.
Simpler. So it's
it
really
swims
what
around
we call
and doesn't
the,
do much else, right?
Yeah, the higher, or what they call the coleoid cephalopods, which are squid, cuttlefish, and octopus.
So what does this new study, I mean, there have been these headlines that say, you know, you found the secret to octopus intelligence. I'm guessing you wouldn't quite say that's
no,
accurate.
No, I wouldn't even go, you know, one-tenth of the way there.
What have you figured out about how on earth this one small group so quickly, in evolutionary terms, has created such a different kind of intelligence from all of its relatives?
Yeah, I think, you know, everyone would agree the first thing you would look at are the number of neurons, how big their brains are. And clearly, you know, a common octopus has about six times as many nerve cells as a mouse, which is extraordinary. Half of those aren't even in the brain. They're in the periphery. So they have tons of nerve cells, and they are in different places. They're using them in different ways. But having a lot of nerve cells is not a new concept for us in terms of correlating with intelligence. What's interesting here is the fact that they're rewriting their genetic information at the level of RNA.
Okay, so let's go back. Let's go back to basic molecular biology primer. Mm-hmm. There's DNA, there's RNA, there's proteins. What's the relationship there?
I mean, I'd like to, if a nice analogy, look at your DNA, and your DNA contains all of the information that you'll need for your whole life to do
everything.
That's
what we call the
genome. And that's all the information you need to do everything that you're going to do. At any one time, you only need a subset of that. And that is basically copied into RNA molecules. So those are the instructions you need at the moment, at any one moment. And then they are decoded into the proteins that actually do the work.
So I've sometimes heard it, the analogy, it's like the genome, your DNA is like the cookbook.
Yeah,
the RNA is the one recipe you're using right now, and the proteins are the ingredients that you actually turn into it.
And let's take that analogy a step forward. What happens if, you know, you have a recipe for tacos you're cooking tonight, and you found out that the person who's coming over for dinner hates spicy food? It might be really useful for you to leave out the chili peppers.
Okay.
Okay. So, but that was not encoded in the recipe. What do? Well, the octopus and squid, they figured out a way to biochemically modify instructions at the level of RNA.
So doing that, I mean, when we're talking about what is normal evolution, DNA changes in the genome that can then be inherited from parents to offspring. That's how what we would call maybe normal evolution, right?
Okay, yeah, but let's...
Can you inherit these changes in the RNA? How would this lead to evolution?
Certainly, and that was one of the interesting findings. But I think if we divide up the study, there are two, in my mind, two important points here. The first one was that they can rewrite information in RNA, basically tweak it at an unprecedented level. You don't see this in any other organism. And they're doing it in...
You see the process, but not this amount of it.
Yeah, exactly. We do it in our brain. And in fact, there's one specific little change we make that if you didn't make it, you'd die soon after birth, at least according to mice and rats. So it happens
and
in
that
us.
Is?
It's in a neurotransmitter receptor in our brain that gets recoded by this process. But the interesting thing is it's exceedingly rare in almost every other organism that's tested. But suddenly, in squid, octopus, and cuttlefish, over 60% of all their messages, their instructions, get rewritten in RNA level. And that's staggering. And the other interesting thing is not only that is happening, it's what they're choosing to recode. And those are the very messages that make a neuron a neuron, I'd say. So if you take a step back and think of what does a neuron do, a nerve cell that's different than other cells, and that is they create electrical signals. They pass these signals from one cell to another through a chemical message, which is what they call synaptic transmission.
Those are the neurotransmitters.
Yeah, right. So it goes from an electrical signal within a neuron, then it jumps over to the next neuron via a chemical signal. And then the other thing that's really neat about neurons is their shape. I mean, if you've seen pictures of neurons, they can branch out. They have this tremendous, looks like a Christmas tree structure. They can be over a meter long. So the molecules in what we call the cytoskeleton that gives them their specific shape are also recoded. So squid are choosing to modify the things that make the electrical signals, the things that pass the chemical signals, and the things that give a neuron their shape at tremendous levels. So the very things that have to do with behavior are what's being targeted here.
Does there have to be an element of genome, of DNA evolution that gives the squids or the octopus the instructions to edit RNA?
And this is a common mistake people make when they're thinking about this RNA editing. They think, aha, this is going counter to evolution, to DNA-based instructions. Here, the central dogma says information transfers, you can't change an RNA. It's absolutely false. All of the information to do this editing is encoded in DNA ultimately. Hmm. It's just another layer of complexity on top of that.
It still seems, though, that if you're playing with, you know, to use that analogy, the recipes, every individual, are they each playing with them in different ways, presumably? How do you still maintain the kind of uniformity that this is still the octopus species and they're mostly all intelligent, right? Or are some of them editing their RNA in ways that goes totally astray and presumably they're not smart enough and they don't survive and so we don't see that. But
right. I think, you know, so then that's a great question and that's sort of the next step of where we want to go. We want to understand exactly how the environment and how different factors influence the octopus in terms of when they change these messages. And we don't know the answer to your question right now, and it's definitely something we want to look at. But I think ultimately the instructions to change the information is encoded in DNA. That's it.
How do you actually measure how much RNA editing is going on in an organism?
Yes. So basically what we do is we sequence lots and lots of RNA molecules, and we sequence lots and lots of DNA molecules.
So you're kind of reading off what's there.
Yeah, we read the code at each level in a single individual. So we're not looking at differences between individuals. We have to look at a single squid or a single octopus. We sequence their DNA, their RNA, and we see consistent differences there. So the RNA always has one or two bases that are different, but the DNA is always consistent.
So presumably you have to kill an individual to do that, or can you just take a few cells from a live individual?
Because we're working with brain cells, yeah, you have to sacrifice the individual to do that.
You guys are working on some sort of model, right, that you wouldn't necessarily have to kill the animals, but some sort of model where you could try to investigate this process more. What would that look like?
Well, ultimately, you know, if you could manipulate the ability to edit the process by, and you can do this by environmental factors, by potentially by chemical modifications. You could influence their ability to change their RNAs, and then you could film or look at behavioral outcomes.
When you say chemically, like give them some sort of drug that would block their ability to do it?
Exactly. Or? You know, so if there's an enzyme we know that's doing the editing, if we block the ability of that enzyme to edit, we could do that and then look at behavioral